So we are holding on Hoof Lamed Tes Amud Beis, the second, the next to last line of the narrow line, Lamed and Hadassias. All right, we learned a braisa that went through the pasuk about, that went through the first pasuk about Shiloh HaKan and explained the various dinim that we learned from that. We said, ki yikore kan tipo lefanecha. Ki yikore means that you don't have to go out and search for the mitzvah to be done. You don't have to go wandering around the hills and the mountains. If you find the nest, then you have the mitzvah. We discussed also what the Chavos Yoyer says, that once you find the nest, you're immediately obligated, versus have various other achronim who say only if you actually want the chicks or the eggs. Anyway, kan means even if there's only one egg or one chick in it, as the next Mishnah is going to tell us later. Sipur means it has to be dafka tahor bird. Lefanecha means you find it in Rishos HaYachid. Baderech would mean also if you find it in Rishos HaRabim. Bechol Eitz would mean if you find it in a tree. And Oyal Ha'aretz would mean if you find it in a pit in the ground. And then the braisa continued, if after all, we're saying we're including everything.
On the ground?
Well, in other words, if you find that on the ground, that's also obvious. Oyal Ha'aretz means even if you find it in a pit. So after all, since we're including everything, we have Rishos HaYachid, Rishos HaRabim, trees, and Bordas, Shechen, and Maris, and eventually we're learning the latter from Al Ha'aretz, which means anything that's on the ground. So why do we need the words Lefanecha and Baderech? So we said, really, what it is we're learning from Derech that something that's on the Derech, something that's on the road, is not yet in your possession. Therefore, to be chayiv and shelo hakan, it has to not be in your possession. And therefore, we said that only if it's nesting out in the wild or out in an open orchard or whatever, only then you're chayiv and shelo hakan, but not, for example, if it nested in the house. Okay, thus far the braisa. So now let's analyze it. On the mar, we learned in the braisa, ma derech shein kinei biyadcha, just like on a road, the nest is not in your possession because it's not something you can't have been carrying it over there. So the same thing, anything else that where it's not in your possession. So the question is, halamali, why do I need to learn that from the word baderech? Mi ki yikore nafka. Ki yikore prat lamazuman. We should be able to learn that from the words ki yikore, which ki yikore implies that it's something that's not pre-prepared for you, something that you just happen to find. In other words, the braisa darshan ki yikore can mean that you're not obligated to go look for it. If you happen to find it, then you find it. But the simple meaning of ki yikore is if you happen to find it. So why do we need a separate word baderech to teach us that concept? And also, okay, the braisa explained why we need the word baderech, but it didn't explain why we need the word lefanecha. Okay, Ella, no. So we're going to say it like this. Lefanecha, the word lefanecha is last suriye shahoy lefanecha umod. The word lefanecha comes to include the case where originally the birds were lefanecha, they were before you, in other words, they belonged to you, and then they ran away, which we said before. That, for example, you have a chicken or a goose or whatever that rebels and runs away and then sets up a nest somewhere in the great outdoors and you hide in Shiloh HaKan. So we learn that from the word lefanecha. And what do we learn from Baderech? Kidder of Yehuda Amirav. We're actually learning from Baderech, not so much what the Brai said, that from Baderech we learn something that's on the road, you haven't been koine, therefore it means that you weren't koine over here. Rather, we're learning a different din from Baderech. Kidder of Yehuda Amirav. We're learning what Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav. The Amir of Yehuda Amirav, Motza Kain Bayam, if a person finds a nest in the ocean or in the sea, how would that be? Rashi explained. Let's say, for example, that the water swept away a tree, and there was a nest on top of the tree. So now the tree is floating there in the water, and the nest is floating on top of that.
But that's not a
derech. Well, so he's saying chayev b'shiluach. You are actually chayev in shiluach hakan if you swim out there and you happen to get the nest. One second. Dichtiv, as because a matter of fact it is. Because you have a pasuk that says Koyamar Hashem hanoisin bayom derech b'goyim. Hashem says, I am the one who makes a derech, who makes a road in the sea, namely by Kriyas Yamsa, for example. So therefore we see that...
I guide you.
That's fine, but nevertheless, the fact that the Yam is called derech implies that therefore the Yam can be called derech, and therefore if it says baderech, then you're obligated to do Shiloh HaKan there. I guess another possibility, by the way, would be there are certain kinds of birds that actually build their nests in the water, whatever. Anyway, the point is, it's considered a derech. Okay. So the question is, Elamayasa... It doesn't matter. They can't be domesticated. We said that if they're domesticated, if they live with you, you're potter from Shiloh HaKan. So these kinds of birds, petrels or whatever, yeah, if they're kosher birds, I don't know if they're kosher birds, but if they are, then yeah, maybe some of them are. Anyway, okay, fine. So that's what we learned from the word baderech, that even if you find the nest in the water, you still have to do Shiloh HaKan. Okay, so the question is, Elamayasa, by that logic, what happens if you find the nest in the sky? Let's say, for example, you have Rashi describes a bird is carrying a nest with its beak or its wings or whatever. Are you going to derech nesher b'shamayim? And you have also a pasuk that refers to the road of the nesher, the eagle or the vulture or whatever a nesher is exactly in the heaven. So then the hachinami, the machayim shaloh hakan. Are you going to tell me that machayim shaloh hakan if there's a nest flying in the air? The answer is the Gemara says no. Derech nesher ikri, derech stama leikri. No, because there the pasuk is calling it the way of the nesher, but it's not just calling it plain a way. The previous pasuk from Yeshaya says Hanosin by Yom Derech. In the sea there is a road, so it's just called plain a road, just like a road on the ground. But over here the pasuk in Mishlei Shlomo HaMelech is calling it Derech Nesher. It's the road of the Nesher, so it's not just a plain old road.
You say Derech Nashim, you would say Derech Nesher.
That's fine. Well, I mean, in context, what Shlomo is saying over there, the Shlosha Hema Niflu Minyemi Meni, there are things, Avala Yadatim, there are three things, and then a fourth thing, there are three things that are too wonderful for me, that are too wondrous for me, and a fourth one, which I don't know, and one of them is Derech Nesher Bashamayim, like when an eagle or a vulture or whatever it is flies in the sky afterwards, it doesn't leave a trail behind, you can't tell where it was, so it's impossible to tell, so we see that's fine.
Put a camera on.
Yeah, okay, come on. So the point is, that's called Derech Nesher. It's called the road of the eagle, but it's not just called plain Derech. So therefore, it's not included in the mitzvah. They say that in this connection, they once asked the Rogachover, do you have to say Tzilas HaDerech on air travel? And he pointed to the Gemara and said that you see that, no, it's only called Derech Nesher. It's not called plain Derech. So Tzilas HaDerech just means it has to be called a Derech without any qualifier. Okay, the I think it's Menachem Kasher writes this, that he said, or maybe it's Shlomo Yosef Zevin, I don't remember which one it is, that asks the Rogachover. He says, okay, it's a nice virtual, but not necessarily is it valid off the halacha l'maisa. Because of that, because of other considerations, what people do is the minhag is you say Tzilas HaDerech for an airplane flight, you say Tzilas HaDerech when the airplane is taxiing or on the way to the airport if the airport is outside the city or whatever, rather that way you go to either way. The people of Papunoi, whatever is the name of a place in Babel, ask Rav Masna, how about a case? What if you find the nest on top of a person's head? Is that considered that it's on the ground? Now, how would you ever find a nest on a person's head? So the Aruch HaShulchan mentions an interesting thing. He says you have these hermits, these swamis and whatever in India who go and not necessarily do they start to have nests on their heads, but like they go there into the forest and seclude themselves and whatever to meditate and whatever. So they stay there sometimes motionless so long that you end up with dirt on piling up on their heads, and eventually a bird could make a nest on that. I saw actually a story in that connection where I was looking for the story all day, and then I found it. No, he was dead. Sorry, if you mean he was dead, he was different. He didn't have a head; they chopped off his head. But anyway,
but he had a dream.
But he had the birds were pecking out of that basket on his head. But anyway, I was looking for the story all day because I saw a reference to it in the notes in the English art scroll, and then I finally found it just before the shiur of a little story in that connection where Reb Ezra Atiyah, who was one of the big Syrian rabbanim of about 50 years ago, in 1970. He was one time teaching a class in Gemara to Balabatim, and they got to this Gemara, teaching them about the Din of Shlomo HaKan, whatever. They got to this point about a nest on a person's head. So somebody over there starts laughing at him. Wait a minute, I'm going to find a nest on a person's head. As the guy's laughing at him. No. So then a guy all of a sudden comes into this medrash and interrupts and starts telling everybody, I just got back from a trip to India and I saw this most amazing thing. There's a guy standing there in the forest with a nest on his head, and everybody realized that it was Hashgacha Pratis that Hashem had sent the guy to this medrash just at that moment in order to prove the point. So the guy asked Mephila. Anyway, so what if you find a nest on a person's head? Omar, so the master answers, well, you have a pasuk, you have actually a few times in Sefer Shmuel, that it uses the expression va'adama al roshay, there was earth on his head. You have different places. You have, for example, when the news was brought that Jewish people were defeated in the battle against the Plishtim and the Aren had been captured. You had when Hushai Aoki meets David when he's running away from Avshalom. There's a couple of different situations where it says they put dirt on their head, and you see that it's still called Adama. had it been, now Rashi points out, when earth is detached from the ground, it's called Hofer. So here, if it's still called Adama, implies, in other words, being on top of the person's head, it's still considered as though it was part of the ground. Therefore, the nest on top of it can still be considered like it was on the ground. And therefore, yes, it would be chayiv in shiloh hakam. The Rambam adds by the same logic also, if you find it on top of an animal, same idea. Then they asked him something else, something which seems to be completely out of left field. So we'll talk what the connection is afterwards. They ask him, Moshe min HaTorah minayin. Where is there a remez to Moshe in the Torah? Now, what do you mean, where is there a remez? Moshe is mentioned 100 times in the Torah. So Rashi explains, the question was, where do we have a remez before Moshe was even born that eventually there's going to be a Moshe Rabbein? And the answer is, with the pasuk from the end of Parashas Bereishis, B'shagam hu basar. Hashem says, Lo yodin ruchi ba'olam la'od, ba'odim la'olam. I'm not going to keep on contending and arguing with people and trying to get them to do tshuva and whatever. B'shagam hu basar, after all, they're just flesh, and I'm going to give them 100. B'shagam means because, after all. Given that their flesh, the word b'shagam is an odd word. It's a very rare word. And the gematria of it is the same as Moshe. And the pasuk continues, v'hayu yom of me'ev etzim shana. So in context, it means either that Hashem is saying, I'm going to give them another 120 years, and if they don't do tshuva, I'm going to bring the marbul, or it means that after the marbul, gradually the human lifespan is going to be reduced to 120, and Moshe lives to 120. So therefore, so the pasuk in Miram is, the shagam, that Moshe, who is yet to even be born, is going to end up living 120 years.
This is
before the marbul. So this is the end of Parashas Bereishis. So this is like 800 years before Moshe was born. Okay. Then next they asked him, Homan min HaTorah minayin, where is there a remez in the Torah to Homan? And he answers them, the pasuk Hamin Ha'et. After the Chet Tadat, Hashem says to Adam, did you eat from the tree? And the word Hamin is the same letter as Homan. Esther min HaTorah minayin, and they asked him, where is there a remez to Esther in the Torah? And he answers them, let's learn the Gemara first, and then we'll talk about a couple of different approaches that many of them in Farshim obviously have many different approaches what the Gemara is doing over here and what these people are doing with these questions. The fact that it's in the Gemara, though, after all, I mean, it means there's something, there's something very important in it. Okay. Esther min HaTorah minayin, and they ask him, where's the remez to Esther in the Torah? In particular, Rashi says, so first of all, with Hamin Ha'et, so Haman is going to be hanged on the tree, so that's the remez. With Esther, the question is, where do we have the remez for that, for the fact that there was going to be such terrible troubles in her time, that the Jewish people were threatened with being destroyed, Chas V'Shalom? And the answer is, the prophet says, V'Amechi Haster Aster. Hashem says, I will hide my face. So we see, in other words, there's going to be a prayer. And Esther is from the same church. It's in Parshas Vayevach, that Hashem warns that if the Jewish people do Averus, there's going to come a point, Hashem says, when I'll so to speak, hide my face. Like I'll pretend as though I'm not looking after the Jewish people and leave them to, and then leave them seemingly to natural forces. So that's the remez to Esther. And then they ask him, Mordechai min HaTorah minayin, where is there a remez to Mordechai, specifically Rashi says to the greatness, to the fact that he became prime minister, etc. The dichtiv Mordechai, because you have in the ingredients of the Torah, it mentions Mordechai, so it's mentioned the first of all the ingredients of the Torah, Mordechai, which means pure myrrh, or pure musk. There's two major approaches among the Rishonim, what myrrh is. It's either myrrh, which is a plant material, or many of the Mepharshim, including the Rambam and many other Rishonim and Achronim, learn that it's musk, which comes from the musk deer, which lives in India and Nepal and that part of the world. Yeah, anyway. So Mordechai is a pure Mordechai, Umetagum Minan, and the Taugum Umpolos on those words. Mordechai is Mera Dachya, which is the same root words as Mordechai. So from that we see, therefore, just like that was the chief of all the spices, that's the head of the list of spices, so also Mordechai was the head of the Tzadikim and the head of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola in his time.
But Aster, why does it just refer to the generation of Esther? It could refer to many, many times in the Torah.
That's true, but they were asking specifically, where is there a remez to the kind of Hester punim that there was in Esther's time, where it seems as though the Jewish people are not being looked after by Hashem anymore, and then all of a sudden, then everything turns around, and not who, and you're in, and you see that there's a nest, although even then the nest is hidden in Tevah. So, okay, what are the deeper ideas behind these questions? So, of course, there's a lot of explanations. Many, many Rishonim and Achronim take up this whole issue. Marsha explained that the questions were, after we dealt with the question about the nest, the reason why they're asking about these four figures, he says, is because when we get down to it, all these four figures have other names in Tanakh, And also, not necessarily are their names, are the names that they have that were given for them, are they necessarily Hebrew names? Moshe Rabbeinu, for example, was named not by Baskia. She called him Minamayim Bashisihu, but there's also explanations that it was actually she named him, she gave him a name that has a meaning in Egyptian, and we know from the Medrash that he had about half a dozen, he had like 10 other names as well. So you could think maybe his real name is not Moshe, his real name is something else, one of the other names that it says in the Sukkim over there. So therefore the question is Moshe Natar Minayim, where is there a remez that Moshe is his real intrinsic name, the name that truly suits him more than any other. And the same thing with Haman, who's also called Memuchan, the same thing with Esther, who's also called Hadassah, the same thing with Mordechai, who's also called Tzachia. So with each
one,
the Gemara mentions that Haman was Memuchan. There are different opinions in the Medrash, but the Gemara in Megillah says that Haman was Memuchan. Yeah. Or Memuchan is Haman, whatever. So that's why Shah explains that's why they focused on these four. To show the Torah as Madamas, each one of them, this is the name that really suits them. This is their most true name that expresses what they're all about.
Because
because again with Moshe you have the specific reference to him, the specific remez to him in the Torah is using the name Moshe. The specific remez to Haman is not using the name of Mochan, but rather using the name Haman, etc. Okay, you have a lot of other explanations, including that one interesting one is that the first they ask about Moshe in continuation to the question about the nest. We're saying that a nest on a person's head is still considered as though it was on the ground, because a person himself is made from the ground, after all. So, So the question is, does that even apply to somebody like Moshe Rabbeinu, where the Medrash actually says on Moshe Rabbeinu, when it calls him Ish HaLekim, he's like, so to speak, half Ish and half HaLekim. So, like, is he like that? And the answer is yes. The Shagam Hu Basar, after all, he's flesh. Nevertheless, though, you see what flesh, what heights flesh can reach, so you can be a Moshe Rabbeinu. And then once they ask about Moshe, they ask about his antithesis, which is Haman, whose whole Messias was to destroy the Jewish people. And then once we're talking about the Maharal says it. And then once we mention about him, then the question is, where do we see a remez to Esther and to Mordechai? Because after all, we know that Hashem always creates the cure before the disease. So if there's going to be the disease of Haman, there has to be the cure of Mordechai and Esther, who defeated him. So where is there a remez to them in the Torah?
There we go.
So we have a remez to them.
Is there any remez to the altars?
I don't know. I'm sure there is, but I don't know. Later on, I'll tell you something the Meshech Chachma says about it. But let's get to that later. Let's not go too far off topic. Again, there's many, 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 many others. And by the way, as far as this thing of Cain Berosh Shel Adam is also, it's brought in Chassidus, but there are also Ramazim about it, about the high levels that a person can reach, which therefore also connects with Moshe Rabbeinu. We mentioned yesterday the neck and the burden it represents the Jewish people and the Shechinah and whatever. So it's on a person's head. We're talking about a very, very high level of Kedusha that he reaches. There's even an explanation. How does a person reach that? By Adama Al Rosha, where he realizes he has above his head constantly the realization that after all he's just made from the dirt and he doesn't have any great importance of his own, only as a servant of Hashem.
But it's all very fine, but our mission is to bring the Torah down among.
That's fine. The point is it's on his head, which therefore, yeah. So. Okay. One other explanation, among many others that we could choose from, Ben Yehoyada says that at least with the ones with Haman and Esther and Mordechai, the question is, where do we have a remez that what was done with each of them was the correct procedure? Like this, when Mordechai refused to bow to Haman, who says that was the correct thing? I mean, after all, he endangered the whole Jewish people. And the answer is the remez, Minha 8, tells us that Mordechai realized Haman is destined to be hanged on the tree anyway. So therefore, he didn't worry about what are going to be the consequences of provoking him. And then similarly, the question is, what was he right in hiding Esther? And then in hiding Esther and telling her to hide her nationality? And so, and the answer is, yeah, that's bad. Only he has to ask her. So he had a remez for it in the Torah. And was Mordechai himself correct in taking this high position in the king's palace, being the prime minister? And yes, because Mordechai, yeah.
What's the connection to Mordechai?
The connection is, as you actually said, because it's listed first among all the spices. So therefore, so like we see that he's supposed to have a chief position.
It says
Madur,
but it's supposed to be
Madur,
the man of freedom.
Well, Dura means free, so it means free flowing or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Could be. Okay, I mean, also Maharal says that once you have the death represented by Haman, like the Torah counteracts death, and therefore Mordechai is compared to the Torah. The Torah Smirma brings something. He says that why is Haman specifically merumas, and the thing about the tree is because we see that was the first case where people ate something that they weren't supposed to. Adam and Chava ate and ate that. The same thing. Where did Haman get his power, and why Chas v'Shalom were the Jewish people slated to be destroyed? Because they ate Machashverosh Sodah. So that's also another connection. Okay, this is a lot.
That's where he got his power.
So that's where he got his power from, and that's why he's Merum as an Amin Ha'il. Yeah. Okay, now, there's a lot more that we can talk about, but we have more Gemara to learn, so let's go on. Okay.
The French cathedral is
yeah. Okay.
What
does that mean? We'll talk about it afterwards. Let it be off the record. Okay. The Mishnah said that Zehu She'enu Mezuman. What is an example of a nest that's not Mezuman? So we gave an example over there. Let's say we said you have doves, for example, the Mishnah gave is, let's say, you have geese or chickens that nested out in the orchard, and then we said you have feral doves versus you have Yonei Hadrasiyos. So let's focus on those a little bit. Rav Chiya v'Rav Shimon, Chad Toni Hadrasiyos, V'chad Toni Hadrasiyos. They have different versions of the name that these doves, these fully domesticated doves, are given. Is it Hadrasiyos or is it Hadrasiyos? So Manda Toni Hadrasiyos is Al-Shem Hordus. They're named after Hordus because he domesticated them, as we're going to talk in a minute. Well, Manda Toni Hadrasiyos Al-Shem Mekoman. The one who says they're called Hadrasiyos is they're named after the place where they come from. One possibility, the Aruch HaSholem says that Hadrasiyos might be the island of Rhodes. So they may have been originally domesticated there. Okay, anyway. Amr of Kahana, the Didi Chazion, I saw such Yonei Hadrasiyos, the Kaiman Shitzo Dori, they stood in 16 rows, the Psei Mila, in the width, so each row was a mil wide. So a mil is about a kilometer, about 3,000 to 4,000 feet. So there were 16 such rows. Vahavakori kiri kiri. And all of these birds are calling out kiri kiri, which means master, master. Now, why are they doing that? So we just said that they're associated with Hordus, that he domesticated them. So what happened was, in other words, that we know from various Gemaras, Mahavra, we know from secular sources as well, that Hordus was originally an Eved who rebelled and eventually became king. He was an Eved Kanani, yeah. He was actually descended from the Adjoimim, but whatever, yeah. So he
never became really Jewish.
Well, so he was just quasi-Jewish. He was like an Eved, he was like the din of an Eved Kanani, yeah. So anyway, so, yeah.
He didn't get shit for,
exactly. So he eventually rebelled, he wiped out all the Hashmonaim, he made himself king under the protection of the Romans and whatever, and he was always very paranoid. We learned in Baba Basra how he killed the Chachamim because he suspected that they were going to rebel against him. Well, there's that too, yeah. Yeah, that's true, but especially over here where he came from such ignoble origins, so he was always very sensitive about this, so therefore he had these birds that they're all calling out, kiri, kiri, master, master. Okay, Pasha, you know, in the Shurim, to say in the Shurim, I got his Chazal that they have downstairs. He says who just wanted to have, like, there should be a constant propaganda machine going on, always proclaiming that he's king. Because even if it's only birds saying it, after a while, you know, people hear it and it has a certain effect on them. Yeah, they start believing it, exactly. Okay. Continues Rav Kahana, have a chad minayor, delay have a kori kiri kiri. Then there's one bird and all these thousands of birds. Tens of thousands, whatever. You have one who's not calling out kiri kiri. Amr al-Khabrata, so a fellow bird, next day it says, well, Suma, you're blind here, you're blind. Well, don't you realize you're going to get killed if you do that? Amri kiri kiri, say kiri kiri, like the rest of us are. Amra, so the bird that's not saying it answers back, Suma, you're the blind one. Amri kiri biri, or kiri, it says on the side. Better what you should be saying is, the master is really a slave. The word kiri means a master, biri or kiri means a slave. In other words, we should be telling the truth. Well, the Gemara continues. Kiri means a master, and it comes from a Greek word that means a master, kirios. And biri or kiri also means a slave.
So
kiri biri, the master is a slave. The master, meaning Hordus, is really a slave. So Hordus' servants, or whoever was there, the descendants of Hordus' servants, because Rav Kahana several generations later, took that bird and killed it for speaking up like that.
Because he was saying that because he was a slave.
No, but he was saying, yeah, the bird is saying, we've got to tell the truth. We can't be just constantly just saying over the, we can't just be saying over this guy's propaganda all the time. We've got to tell the truth. And so he paid for it with his life. Amr of Ashi, so Rav Ashi says in this connection, so Rav Kahana had told the story, so Amr of Ashi, so Rav Ashi says, Amr Rav Chanina Milin. Rav Chanina told me Milin. Milin literally means words. And Rashi says it's empty words. There's no such thing ever happened. What do you mean, Milin? What do you mean, Milin? I mean, Rav Kahana says he saw it. Oh, Rakana is not going to be lying to us. Okay, there can be a remez in it, there can be whatever, but the fact is, he's saying he saw it. You know, you gotta say he's telling the truth. Ela ema bin milin. No, rather what Ravashi says is, Rav Chanina told me bin milin. How was this accomplished? I mean, doves don't talk. It was done through kishur. Hurdus, I guess, or somebody on his staff or whatever, did Kishuf to arrange for these birds to be able to speak and then call out all the time, kiri, kiri. And then later on, in Rav Kahana's times, this thing happened that one of them tried to speak up and then inform everybody of the truth. Yeah. Different explanation. The Aruch says, bimilin means we're talking about it here, that this was all taking place in bird language. In other words, Rav Kahana knew what's going on because he understood bird language. The average person would just see a bunch of birds twittering.
Who else
that? I don't know. We find Shlomo Malach knew it. We find that we have a Gemara in Gittin that there was a guy in Rav Elish's generation who knew it. And you have your name in history. Okay. Anyway. All right. Then the Mishnah said. Oh, so anyway. So these are the Yonei Hadassiyos. So these are these fully domesticated doves that the Mishnah is talking about. Okay. Most of the ones of them are not like the ones from here where they're so domesticated that they're just saying they're just calling out kiri kiri all the time. But the point is they do live with people and therefore they're part of your shalach. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Oif tomei potim el shalach. When it comes to a non-kosher species of bird, if you find the nest of it, you're potter from shalach. So menahani mili. Where do we know this? The pasuk says, "Ki yikare kan tzipor lefanecha." The pasuk says, "If you find a nest of a tzipor in front of you." Now, you have two words. You have two words in Hebrew for a bird. You have oif and you have tzipor. So, oif mashmalon ben tohar ben tomei. The word oif could mean either a tomei or a tohar species. So, if it had said, "Ki yikare kan oif lefanecha," then it would apply to non-kosher birds as well. But tzipor. Tohar Ashkochon de Ifri, Sipur Tomei like Ashkochon de Ifri. We only find that Sipur is used of kosher birds. We don't find the word Sipur being used of non-kosher birds. Therefore, it's not even there. Therefore, automatically, when the Pasuk says Kikari Kan Sipur, then it excludes non-kosher species. So that's what we're going to go through a few possibilities over here and see whether that works. There is actually I saw a verse that the word Sipur is actually the gematria Oif Tohar. So, yeah. Okay. But then the Gemara is not doing the Gematria. The Gemara is just saying, linguistically, the word Sipur means a kosher bird. Okay, the question is, Toshma, let's prove from the Pasuk to the contrary. The Pasuk says in Parshas Bar Tzachanan, be careful that you don't make any kind of idols, including Tavnis called Sipur Konef, an image of any winged bird. You're allowed to make them for non-worship purposes. You're allowed to make images of most kinds of creatures, not where you're just for decoration, but you're not allowed to make them for worship. And so the prophet is warning you, don't make any kind, even for example of a bird. So when it says sipur, tamnes hol sipur konav, my lab, shouldn't we assume that the word sipur means ben tahar ben tomei? The word sipur includes whether it's kosher or not, and konav would therefore include chagovim, that don't make an image of a locust to worship it. The answer is no. Sipur means tohar, konaf means tomei v'chagavim. The word konaf, anything that has wings, means also non-kosher birds and grasshoppers.
So
the word sipur by itself was that's the positive thing. Tavnis called sipur konaf. Don't make an image of any sipur, which is a kosher bird, or konaf, or anything, or any non-kosher bird or locust. Yeah.
You could imply that you can make a non-tohar bird.
No, that's why it says konaf. The word konaf would include that you can't make an image of a, you can't. Sipur would mean you can't make an image of a dove or a pigeon, or of a dove or a chicken or whatever to worship it. And konaf would mean that you also can't make an image of an eagle or a vulture or a grasshopper to worship it.
So why the Torah doesn't it just...
So that's why we say sipur and konaf separately. Okay, could have said always, but like this, because the word konaf also would include grasshoppers. If you didn't have that, you wouldn't have that. Okay, what about Toshma? You have a pasuk in Tehillim, Hachaya b'chol behema remes tzipor konaf. We say it every day in davening. The wild animals and all the domestic animals, the creeping animals and all the winged birds, they all praise Hashem. Again, my lav tzipor means ben tohar ben tomei, the konaf chagavim. And the answer is again, no, same thing. Lo, tzipor means tohar, all the kosher birds praise Hashem, and konaf means tomei the chagavim, all the non-kosher birds as well as all the locusts also praise Hashem, all the grasshoppers also praise Hashem. Toshma, called Sipur Kokonov, another pasuk you have in connection with Mabel, where it said when it describes the creatures that Noach brought into the Teva, it says he brought in Kol Sipur Kokonov, all birds, all wings. again, my lab to the machine. And shouldn't we assume that the meaning of the pasuk is like we asked originally, that sipor means the kosher, means all kinds of birds, and konach means the other winged creatures like locusts. And the answer is no, kidimashaninan, the way we answer that. Sipor specifically means the kosher birds, and konach means everything else that has that, everything else that flies. Why is it, I mean, this pasuk is in Parashas Noach before any of the other pasukim. Why is it being mentioned last? A couple of different explanations. One of them is the Lev Aryeh talks about that Rashi explains on the pasuk over here that the way the pasuk is parsed is koil sipur kokonah. The word koil is separate, and sipur kokonah means any bird that has a wing. So therefore, the Gemara assumes. So therefore, the Gemara first tried the other pesukim where the Gemara first tried the other pesukim where it's clear that that the word kol goes with sipur and that sipur and konaf are two separate things, and then it tried this pasuk where it seems like sipur kol konaf is one continuum. Yeah. So the point is, you're still darshan, not necessarily with a simple meaning that sipur means that for the kosher bird and kol konaf means anything else that has wings.
The two calls.
Sipur kokonaf, and Rashi explains on the pasuk that sipur kokonaf means any kind of bird that has any kind of wing. Tosfos points out there were other pesukim in Tanakh that the Gemara could have asked from also, but with those pesukim it seems more clear that we're talking about kosher species. Okay. What about Toshma? Pasuk in Yechezkel describes after the war of Gog and Magog, after the army is defeated over there and you have dead bodies all over the place. So the pasuk describes how the Jewish people are going to have to bury them. It's at the end of that Torah of Shabbos Chalamei Pesukim. But afterwards, the pesukim describes Va'asa Ben Adam. Hashem says, "You Ben Adam," which is the name for Yechezkel throughout that sefer. Emor L'tzipor Kokonah. Say to all the birds with all the wings that they should come, and that they can come, and all the animals that they can come and enjoy a feast over there. They're going to feast on all the dead bodies. So again, my lab kadakshin, shouldn't we assume, like we asked, that sipur means any kind of bird, and kol konaf means anything else that has wings, like locusts? And the answer is again, in loy kedushanin, and loy, we can say, like we answered, that sipur means only the kosher birds, and kol konaf means all the other winged creatures, kosher and non-kosher birds, and all kinds of locusts and grasshoppers and what have you. Okay, I mean, kosher birds don't usually eat meat, but I guess not necessarily. Maybe some of them do sometimes. Oh, okay. So there you go, then. Okay, Toshma, come, let's try to prove from another pasuk. In Daniel, and say for Daniel, you have a story there where Nebuchadnezzar has this dream. He sees this gigantic tree that among the birds are nesting in its branches, and the wild animals are resting underneath it. And then a malach comes and orders the tree to be cut down, but then it's going to eventually regenerate. Daniel tells him what's going to happen is a famous story where Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar that Hashem has decided you're going to go crazy for 7 years and you're going to go out live out in the yeah, you, the tree represents you because like you everybody is sustained by you and everybody depends on you and whatever, but you're going to, the chopping down the tree represents that you're going to go crazy and you're going to be living in the forest among the wild animals like a wild animal until you eventually realize that Hashem is in charge of the world and then you'll have your kingship back, etc., etc. Anyway, the pasuk describes the tree. In the branches of that tree, the birds of the heavens live. Now, it doesn't say over there the word konos. So now, both kosher and non-kosher birds rest and then nest and then roost and whatever in trees. So therefore, clearly the word sipare shmaya has to mean non-kosher birds as well. Okay, the answer is sipare shmaya iku, sipare stamale iku. Fine, you can answer like we said before about derech nesher. They're called sipare shmaya. The birds of the heavens is a more generic term, and it means non-kosher ones as well. But just plain sipare, which is the Aramaic equivalent of sipurim, would still mean only kosher birds. Although there is an interesting vote on that, so that I don't remember from who. So a few psukim later, so after Daniel finishes interpreting the dream, he says to Nebuchadnezzar, "I have an idea how you can stave off the trouble, how you can stave off the punishment. Give tzedakah." Actually, the Gemara and Bava Basra criticizes Daniel for doing that. He shouldn't be trying to get the Russia, especially a Russia who destroyed the Beit Mikdash, out of getting the due punishment. Anyway, so so he did. For a year, he was giving tzedakah, and then afterwards, after a year, he decided enough already. Why should I have to give tzedakah? This is the great city of Babel that I built with my genius and my whatever. And Hashem says, "That's it, Daniel. That's it, Nebuchadnezzar. You're finished. You're going off into the forest as a deranged person."
And Daniel was punished.
So Daniel later on, the Gemara says, was punished in one of two ways. Either you have the opinion that he that shachachu migdolase, that he was cut down from his high position and demoted, or the other opinion is that he was punished by having to go through the experience in the lion's den later on. Anyway, the point is, so one of the Mefarshim, I don't remember who, says, so where did Daniel get the idea that Mechanetzer should be giving tzedakah to Jewish people? He says we learned it from this description of it. All Gemara is saying that Tzipore Shmaya includes both kosher and non-kosher birds, but you could also answer that Tzipore specifically means kosher birds, and therefore, since Daniel specifically saw kosher birds, which represent the Jewish people nesting in this tree, then he realized the simon that Mechanetzer should be specifically trying to support the Jewish people. And therefore, and therefore, the tzedakah to Jewish people. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So far, we still don't have any pasuk that unequivocally says that Sipparim refers to non-kosher species, but we can say that each time it means only kosher. Okay. Toshma, kol Sippar Tahora. Okay. How about another pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, when it lists the kosher and non-kosher birds, it starts by saying you can eat any Sippar Tahora, any tahor Sippar miklal de ikas meya. Well, the word Sipor Tahara seems to imply that there's also a Sipor Tmeya. So in that case, Sipor in and of itself doesn't mean only a kosher species. The answer is loy. No, that's not the influence from the pasuk. Mikwal de ika asura. No, the influence from the pasuk is all Sipors are Tahara. They're all Tahar species. But there is a case of a Tahar bird, a Tahar Sipor, which nevertheless is also for some other reason.
So
it's not Tame, but it is also. It is also. So the question is, Mayi, what is that scenario? What is that case? We have a...
What if we said Sipor Asura?
No, that's the point. So, well, okay, fine, because the word Asura is not usually Losh and Torah. The point is, but the word Sipor Tahora can mean you're allowed to eat any bird which is from a Tahor species and otherwise is Mutter, but you have a case of a bird from a Tahor species which is for a different reason Asur, and that one you're not allowed to eat. So the question is, Mayi, what kind of case are we talking about? E-trefa, are you talking about a bird that's trefa, that has a fatal defect? You don't need that. The head you see, if you have an explicit pasuk elsewhere that says that you're not allowed to eat that. Nevelo trefa lo yechal l'tovavah, which is talking about an oif. The e-beshchita de mitzora, are you going to say it's talking about the bird of a mitzora that's shechted? In last week's parasha, we had two birds that are for the mitzora. One of them is shechted, and the other one is dipped in the blood and the water, and then afterwards sent off to fly away. So the one that's shechted, we're going to say the pasuk is implying that you're not allowed to eat it by saying kol tzipor tahora techelu, implying but you're not allowed to eat the one that was shechted for the mitzora. Well, you don't need that. Misaper dekron after. You can learn that from the continuation of the pasuk. It's actually the next pasuk, whatever. The pasuk continues the zeh asher lo sochel mehem. The pasuk says the following you may not eat from them, and then it starts listing the non-kosher species. So those extra words, the zeh asher lo sochel mehem, the rabbis shechutas mitzora, that comes to include the one that was shechted for the mitzora, which is also.
That's where we know it from.
So we know that from. So we don't need to learn it from kol tzipor tahora. So what is if we say that sipor means both kosher and non-kosher species, okay, then kol tzipor tahora techeva means exactly what it sounds like. You're only allowed to eat the tahor species among the sipor. But if you're telling me that sipor itself means only kosher species, and the one that was shechted from the tzora, we already know you can't eat from the zash or the mehem, then what is the word tahora doing in the pasuk over there? The answer is la'olam b'shchuta de mitzora. Okay, we can say that after all, the kol tzipor tahora techelu is referring to the one that was shechted for the mitzora. What do you need it if you have the next pasuk? Okay, v'lav ro'ol b'esa uv'lois b'esa. Fine, the pasuk is repeating it because it wants to tell us that if you were to eat it, you would be over on an esa and a lois b'esa. The esa would be what we get from the implication of kol tzipor tahora techelu. It would be a lava b'mitzal esa. Since the pasuk is telling us you're allowed to eat any tzipor tahora, the implication is, but there's some kind that you're not allowed to eat. That would be a lot of bumbi kol esa. And then in the next pasuk, yeah, b'zeh asher lo tochel mehem, which would be an actual lois esa, such that if a person were to eat it, he would be getting malchus.
So what's the adding of the first?
So the adding esa is, okay, you have many mitzvahs, we have an esa and a lois esa.
What's the point?
The point of it is also, first of all, it means that if a person was over on it, then he's over on two averis, it's not just one. It also means, for example, when he wants to do tshuva, he would have to, besides he gets malchus for the lois esa, he'd also have to bring a korban ola for the esa. It also has to do with can different mitzvah be doche? If it's only a lois esa, then yes, because esa doche lois esa, but if it's a lois esa and an esa, then it can't. So there can be, yeah. Okay, right. Okay, the question is, in that case, then why do you have to bother saying that the pasuk is talking about the shechut of the mitzvah? Just say more straightforward. It's talking about a bird that's treifer. Same thing. Valavra all the eser of the says. You can say the same thing. If you eat a treifer bird, you're over on the eser of kol tibur torah techelu, and the loisah says the velo treifer loyachal. Yeah.
But any treifer you over on both?
Well, we would argue that at least with a treifer of a bird, apparently you'd be over on both. Yeah. The answer is no. This is a case of Dover Halomin Minyonu. This is a case of you learn something from the context or Minyonu de Shotek. After all, the Pasuk Vizeh Asher Lo Tosh Lemehem is definitely referring to the Shota of the Masorah. It can't be referring to anything else. Therefore, by context, therefore, Kol Tzipor Tzahorot Techelu, if we're going to say that it refers to the Shota, if we're going to say that it's just to add an Esther Tzahorot Techelu, it's more logical to say that it refers to the Shota of the Masorah. So again, so far what we're saying because of the context, if the Zashel Sirchlaman, which is the next pasuk, is referring to the Shota of the Mitzvah, then the previous pasuk called Tzipor Tzahorot Techelu must also be referring to the Shota of the Mitzvah. If it was referring to Trefa, then it would be a different context. So okay, that's fine. So far, in other words, what we can say is called Tzipor. Davalam Minyana means you learn something from the context, like over here. Davalam Misayfe means you learn what case something is referring to by looking further down in the passage. Okay. Anyway, the point is that so far we can say that Kol Tzipor Tzahorot Techelu, the word Tzipor itself does mean a kosher species. Kol Tzipor Tzahorot Techelu means that you can have a bird which in and of itself is kosher, but you're not allowed to eat it. Namely, the shchuta of the mitzvah, and then if a person eats the shchuta, the tzipor which is also but not tomei, and then if a person were to eat it, he'd be over on that on the implicit loisaseh, which is actually considered an eser from kol tzipor tzahorot techelu, as well as on the explicit loisaseh from mazal shel eser tomei. So far we can say that tzipor there still means tar. Fine, toshma. What about another positive? Earlier in that same passage about the power of the mitzvah, it says that he has to bring shtei tziporim chayos. It says you have to bring two chayos birds. Now, the simple meaning of chayos, of course, means that they're alive. But it doesn't need to say that, because the next pasuk says you sheft one of them, so obviously they both started out alive. It says you sheft one, and later on it says you send off the other one, so obviously they both started off alive. So my lab, my chayos, what is the word chayos coming to teach us? Lab shechayos tefichah, shouldn't it mean that they're chayos for your mouth? Chayos means, in other words, that they're able to be in your mouth. They're able to exist in your mouth. In other words, you're allowed to eat them. And again, implying the klal de'ikalav shechayos b'ficha, implying again that there would be other kinds of tzipor which are not chayos b'ficha because you're not allowed to eat them because they're non-kosher species, and therefore again, tzipor would be non-kosher as well as kosher. And says, well, no, that's not what we learned from the word chayas, that you should be allowed to eat them. Any birds that you're using, by definition, are going to be kosher birds because they're called tzipor, and tzipor means kosher. So what does the word chayas mean? Shechayim roshe evorim shalahen. It means that their limbs are intact, meaning if they're mechoser ever, then they're kosher. So if a bird is missing a wing or has a missing wing or a dried up wing, or its eye is poked out or whatever, then it's kosher for the paras mitzvah. That's what we learned from the word
chayos.
Yeah, well, it is so, because that's the psukim marcha. No, now we're talking about a different pasuk. Now we're talking about shtei tziporim chayos,
right,
which
right.
is at the beginning of Parashas Mitzvah, and it's clearly talking about Parashas Mitzvah. Yes. But we're saying, again, the Machshin is arguing that maybe the word tziporim means non-kosher, and therefore, when the Torah wants to tell us that they have to be kosher ones, it uses the word chayos. The answer is no. Tziporim itself means kosher ones. Chayos right. means they can't right. be missing a limb. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Toshma mikseicha. Okay. Continue. The next word in the pasuk after the word.
You should know that any carbon can.
This isn't a carbon. This isn't a carbon. This, as a matter of fact, we're going to talk about that later on. No, we're going to talk about that later on in the Amud. This takes place outside the Beis Mikdash, maybe even outside the city.
Right.
At wherever place the soda is in. Yeah, you bring over there these two birds and you shaft one. So it's not a carbon. So yeah.
It's just to make him tar.
It's just to make him tar. It's called, the Gemara further down on the Amud calls it machshir. Yeah.
Sure,
yeah. So we need a positive to tell us that it can't be missing a limb. Okay, but then Toshmami Sefer, but look at the next words in the positive, because it continues to horos. It said the whole phrase is shaped reporting chayos to horos. So the word Tahoros, again, when we cloud the Ikatmeyas, that would seem to imply that there could be supportim that are chayos and yet be tome, and you can't use them. The answer is like we call the Ikatrefas. No, the word Tahoros just means as opposed to Trefas. Question is, what do you mean treifa is machayos nachta? What do you mean? The fact that it can't be a treifa, you can learn from the word chayos. because a trefer is not chaya. A trefer is not going to live. Okay, Tosfos points out we just use the highest to be inserted for the limbs. So how can we say that? How can we say that's also for the tray? Okay, so Tosfos says because over here you could say that it refers over here you could after all say that it refers to both. You could say the Torah doesn't want you to bring something that would be essentially that would be possible for a korban. So that would include tray, and it would include mechos reva.
So it could be
used for both. The same way as by a korban, both of them are possible. The same way over here, we could argue that both of them are possible. Okay, so the question is, okay, so it works. Now, we learned back in Perek Eilu Treifas, we talked about the question of, can a treifa animal or bird live longer term? Or is it necessarily going to die within 12 months? So the halacha is treifa ain't a chaya. That's why we said if you have a sophic treifa, then you can, in principle, you can keep it for 12 months, and if it lives, then you know it's not treifa. But you had an opinion over there that said that no, treifa chaya, that a treifa could live longer term. So hanichalamando am a treifa chaya. So it works out well according to the opinion that a treifa could live. So therefore, you could say that you have the word chaya. So you would need a separate pasuk to teach us that you can't use a treifa. That would be the word tahoris. You can't learn it from the word chaya, because chaya would mean something that could live long term. And according to that, a treifa could live long term, but but if you say a treifa can't live long term, then what are you going to say? The word chayas itself automatically is going to include not a treifa, because the word chayas means that it's going to live. We find that Tosfos points out. We found that in Avodah Zarah in connection with the Mabul, where it says over there that Hashem told Noach to bring into the table Mikol Hachai Mikol Boso. And we said over there, chay means that it can't be missing a limb, and we also discussed over there that it means that it can't be a treifa. So if you say treifa ain't a chaya, then the word chaya automatically excludes the treifa. So why would you need the word tahoros? It must be the word tahoros is because there are siparim that are tame. And we're back to our original point. Yeah. The oid, and besides that, beimam under oma treifa chaya, beimam under oma ain't a chaya, actually regardless whether you say treifa is able to live or not, we don't learn it actually from this word chaya or tahoros. Midatonad Rabbi Shmuel Nafka. We can learn it based on what Tonad Rabbi Shmuel says. The Tonad Rabbi Shmuel, Nem Machshu Machato Bismim. Now you have like this. Inside the Bis Mikdash, you have two types of korban. You have one type which is a machshir. It's not actually coming to be a kapara for an avera. It's just coming to make the person able to be eating kodshim, because otherwise it's a mechosa kapara. So for example, the oshim of a metzora, the chatas of a zog, etc. All those, they're not mechaper per se. I mean, by all of them, the posuk uses the word mechiper, but it's not, no. Now we're talking about things in the Bis Mikdash. The chatas of a zog, for example, or a yeledet, or the oshim of a mitzvah are machshir. Yes, they're being brought as a korban. Yes, they have all the dinim of korbanos. But in terms of what their actual function is, their function is not so much to be machafer on the person to atone for an avera. Rather, their function is to be machshir, to make the person. Right, that's what we're saying, like the Oshim HaTzor. So you have such a thing inside, or Mechaper, the name. You also have in the Bais HaMikdash, you have Korbanos that are meant to be actually Mechaper, like most Chatzoros in Hashem, right? V'nema Machshu Mechaper v'chutz. And then you have, the Torah also tells us, you have a Machshu and you have a Mechaper outside the Bais HaMikdash. The Machshu would be the birds for the HaTzor, because they Machshu him in the sense they don't allow him to eat Korbanos, but they reduce the degree of his Tumah. Up until this point, he was Matame people inside a building where he walks into, for example, he has to stay outside the machne. Now after the thing with the two birds, he has the tumor like of a sheriff. So anybody who touches him becomes Tame, but anybody who carries him not, but not anybody, yeah. So that's the machshir. And you have a machaper outside the Bais HaMikdash, namely the sir Lazozo, which is machaper for the Jewish people.
It's the only one.
Tonad Rabbi Shmuel says, so you have four different things. You have a machshir and you have a machafer in the Bais HaMikdash. Machshir being, for example, the Oshim of Masara, machafer being most other Ashamos and Chatois. You have a machshir outside, the birds of the Masara. You have a machafer outside, the Sur Lazozel. Therefore, Tonad Rabbi Shmuel says, we make a binyan av from one to the other. Ma machshir machafer ha'omer v'shneim also by machshir k'machafer, just like the ones inside the Bais HaMikdash, even though they serve different purposes, they still have the same rules, the Oshim of a Masorah and the Chathas of a Zav or Yavadis or whatever is treated the same as any other Oshim and the same as any other Chathas. It still has the same rules as far as Shchita and as far as Zrita and as far as Kabbalah Saddam and so on and so forth.
The same applies.
The one Bachut. The same way the Machshir and the Machaper that are outside the Beis Hamikdash, also by Machshir to Machaper. The Machshir has the same din as the Machaper. Now, given that the third of Mishtalayach is not allowed to have a mum, and how do we know it can't have a mum? Practically speaking, because how do you designate the third of Mishtalayach? You have a girdle. You have two goats over there. One is going to be Lashem, one is going to be Lazozo. You don't know ahead of time which is going to be which. So neither one can have a mum, because whichever one winds up being the third Lashem is going to be brought in the curtain and can't have a mum. So of necessity, the one Lazozo can't have a mum either. And Marshall says, okay, we're really talking about Shreifa over here, not so much Mumin, but okay, nevertheless, the fact still remains, it can't be a Shreifa either for the same reason, because it can't be a Shreifa as a carbon. Mm-hmm. So once we know that the Sur Lazalzo can't be a Shreifa or a Baal Mum, automatically the same thing would apply to the Machshir outside the Mishnah, especially namely the birds and the Masorah. Okay, a Mum they can have because Mumim don't make a bird possible, but Roshay Evarim would make a possible, Shreifa also. So automatically we know that automatically. We don't need. Yes, so therefore, we know automatically, we don't need the word chayis, we don't need the word tahoris for that. So we're back to the question, doesn't tahoris imply that there are tomei supported? Okay. Ela amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak. So, okay, you're right. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, you're right, the reason why the pasuk says tahoris is not to exclude that there are tomei ones, but rather to exclude a different kind of bird that is also. Now, we thought that it was to exclude a one that's treifa or one that's missing Rosh Evar. We said you don't need that because you learn that from the Binyan Av. From Machshir and Machaper have to be the same. So rather, Nachman says, what is the word Tahoris doing in that process? It's teaching us that you can't use Tzipore Irhanidachas. You can't use birds from an Irhanidachas. So the question is, Lamai. Well, for the ritual, for the mitzvah. Sure. The point is, the pasuk is telling us, by using the word tahoris, the pasuk is telling us you're not allowed to use birds that came from an irani gathas. Now, Tosfos asked the question, we just said that it has to be like a korban. Anything that's possible for a korban is possible for this. Birds from an irani gathas would be possible from a korban because the Jews are not allowed to eat them. Because they're also banal. Okay, Tosfos. Right. So Tosfos says though that maybe you could argue that the mashke yisroel, which was learned to before, that a korban has to become edible by the Jewish people. Maybe that only teaches us things that never had a shachat kosher. For example, or like talaya kerem, we learn a pasuk here. It had a shachat kosher because before the city came in irani gachas, the bird was perfectly motzei banal. Okay, the point is, a bird of irani gachas means that it belonged to somebody in the irani gachas. So like all the other property of the Irani Dachas, it has to be destroyed. So therefore, and it's also Manah. So therefore, so that would be the pasuk telling us that you can't use it for the Masorah. Okay, but the question is, Lamai. Well, okay, which one of the two birds would the Torah have to be informing you? You would have thought you could have used a bird from the Irani Dachas, and I'm telling you from the word Tahoris you can't. Which one? E l'shiluach, do you mean the one that's eventually going to be sent away? Obviously, you can't use one from an Irani Dachas. There's no Kiddush in it. Loi omra Torah shalach l'tekala. Because the Torah can't possibly be telling you to send away that bird and let it fly away, where somebody else could end up stumbling over it. Namely, somebody else is going to find this bird. He's not going to know that it originally came from an Irani Dachas. He's going to use it. He's going to have a hanah. He's going to shech and eat it or whatever, never knowing that there's an issur in it. And that would be a tekala. So obviously, the Torah wouldn't be telling you to do that. Okay, you have a bit of discussion among the Achronim, among others, Shimon Shkot, and others talk about why don't we say there's this all of it, why don't we say it's this bottle of anyway, and actually the Shimon talks about it on the face of it, you could say, so what? No, yeah, you could say most birds in the world are not also, why would it be a tekala for the other person? Okay, so you have explanations from Achronim, among others, fine, the person who finds it isn't doing anything wrong, but you're doing something wrong by sending it all. So there's that. Rav Shimon Shkof talks about Nashara Yosher. He says the idea is Bittul is not really relevant over here because the bird is not mixed up with all the other birds in the world. Rather, as you could say, it's an idea of called the Parish, middle of the Parish, that whatever comes from the majority, but it applies because the fact is most birds in the world are mutter, but nevertheless, the point is, if he doesn't know that came from Yoni Dachas, fine, if you find a bird in general, you're allowed to use it. You don't have to worry that it's also bana. You don't have to worry that it came from an irani dachas. So what have you? Because called the parish made over parish. But nevertheless, I mean, it does have an intrinsic issue on it. It so happens that you don't know about it. But Okay. Anyway, so the point is, so obviously, therefore, there's no chiddush in the pasuk telling us that the bird that's left alive and sent away can't be from an irni dach, huh? Ela l'shchita. No, rather, the chiddush is, the pasuk is telling us, even the one which is shechted, and the one that's shechted, after all, is also b'hana, as we said before. So you would think in that case, it's anyway going to end up being also b'hana, I might as well take it from an irni dach, huh? That is why the pasuk is telling us to hurt us to tell us you can't do that.
You cannot do what?
You can't take a bird from an irni dach for the purification of a matura, where you're going to take it as a bird that's going to be shechted, which is going to be also b'hana. Anyway, you can't do that. That's what the pasuk is telling you the word to hurt us for.
Why would you believe that you could?
Because you would think before it was also b'hana, now it's going to be also b'hana anyway. So so what are we losing out? And the answer is no. The Torah is still telling you exactly.
This is also b'hana.
From the irni dach. And now after you shecht it as a brood of the matura, it's also going to be also b'hana.
No, it's initially asubana, so therefore you cannot shecht it for the matura. You cannot use it.
Mitzvah lav lahonis. Mitzvah lav lahonis. The hana that you get from doing a mitzvah is not considered a hana.
Right.
Okay. Fine. So that's what Nachman Bar Yitzchok's explanation of what the pasuk means when it says tahurus doesn't mean to exclude non-kosher species, it means to exclude a bird from an irni dach. Okay. Rava Amar, Rava says a different answer. The word tahura, the tahurus actually, is teaching us this. Look, forget about irni dach or anything like that. Forget about the bird was also beforehand. Let's say the Kohen came out and brought two birds to be Mekaher, one Metzora, Ruvin. Then after he finished with Reuven, then he has Shimon. So he has one bird left, which he has to send away. Now all of a sudden he finds out there's another Metzora in the area, Shimon, who he needs to do the task. Can he reuse the bird for that? The pasuk is telling us, Rava says, no, you can't. So again, the question is, well, because from the word Tahoris, that's the thing. Lamai, so the question is, which one...
After the use, it's not Tahor anymore?
No, that's the point. The Pasuk is considering it not Tahor for that purpose. Uh-huh. Especially because you actually have, there's an explanation that the Tosfos talks about in other places in Shach, in Kedushin, for example, I think, that actually, we know that the one that's Shechter is Osir. We said before, if you learn it from Mazash or Lotay from Mahem. Even the one that's being sent away, until you actually send it away, is also Osir B'Hana. When you send it away, then it becomes Mosir B'Hana. So therefore, that's what Rabbi is saying. In effect, therefore, the Torah is telling us, by the word Tahoris, you have to use one which currently is Mutabana, and the one that you were supposed to send away is not. Okay, so the question is, Lamai, which one are you saying you can't reuse? Ilashchita, you're talking about the one that, the one that you shechted for the first one. Of course you can't reuse it for the second one. Habari Shaluach, afterwards you have to be able to send it away. El the Shiluach. No, that's what we mean. The one that you are supposed to send away, you would think instead of sending it away, he can reuse it for the second one, mm-hmm. together with another one. No, that's what the word Tahoris teaches us. You can't do that.
So Tahoris doesn't mean really the opposite of Tahoris.
So it means also, basically. Right. It means not also, rather. Yeah. Okay. So that's the second answer. Rapapa Omar. Rapapa says, here's a third explanation, what the word Tahoris comes to exclude. L'tziporim she'chlifu b'tzipori avodazara. If a person took birds and exchanged them for money of Avodah Zarah, so he bought birds from a goy and paid him with money of Avodah Zarah, so the birds become also b'hana. Because the pasuk says you will be a banned object like it, meaning komash, the word b'hoyista means komashas mahaya enenu kamoisei. Anything that is brought into existence from it becomes like it. So therefore, things that are exchanged for money of Avodah Zarah have the din of Avodah Zarah, and they're also b'hana. So that would be another example. So again, lamai. So therefore, the pasuk is telling us you can't use those birds for the birds of the matzora. Why do we know? So the question is lamai. Well, but again, the mitzvah slav lahonis. So you would think maybe you could have used it for the mitzvah. But the question still is lamai. Which one are we saying? Which one is the pasuk being mechadish for us that you can't use? E l'shiluach. Are we saying the one that you're going to send away can't be one that was exchanged for Avodah Zarah? Of course not. Again, like Omer Torah shlach l'tachala. Again, the Torah would never tell us to send away the bird where eventually somebody else would find it, not know that it's also and end up using it. Elo l'shchita. No, rather we mean for the one that you're going to shech. Again, you're going to think that you're going to shech it. It's going to be also b'ana anyway. Why can't it be from chalif Avodah Zarah? No, the word tahorah tells us it can't be. Okay, Ravina Omar. Ravina says a fourth answer. The word tahoris comes to exclude a bird that killed somebody, whereas we learned yesterday you have to give it skill. So the question is, hey, if you don't, so okay, but what's the scenario? Either Gamardina, if you already did Gamardina, of course you can't use it. Bautolahu, anyway, it has to be killed. So of course you can't do, you can't do shchita with it, so it's supposed to be given skila. You can't send it off, because it has to be killed. So of course, Ela kodim Gamardina. No, we're talking about before the Gamard, even before the Gamardina, you're not allowed to use it for the supporting the Torah. So the question is, Lamai, again, which one are we saying that, are we saying the Torah has to inform us that you can't use it, that you can't use it? Eva Shiluach, of course, can't mean the one that you would eventually be sending away, because again, you're supposed to bring it to Beis Din, but Kiyumi Yoriyata or Rambam Tzibacha, so it can't, so there's not even a Havam in it to think that the one, that a bird that killed somebody you should be able to use as the one that eventually you're going to send away. Ela l'shchita. So we have to be talking about, again, the one that you're planning to shaft anyway. So you would think, okay, Yaza or Rabbi Kirbacha, fine, gone from the world anyway, who cares? No, the word Tehodas tells you that you can't do that. So you have four answers of what the word Tehodas is excluding.
It
can't be to exclude non-kosher species. Yeah, it can't exclude non-kosher species because the word sipo automatically excludes those. So therefore, it means, again, the four answers are birds from Eir HaNidachas, that you can't use the one from Eir HaNidachas for the one that's shechted. Rava, that you can't reuse the one that's supposed to be sent away for another one that's going to for another one that's going to be sent away. Rapapa, for one that you exchange for money of Avodah Zarah. And Rabina, for one that killed, for a bird that killed somebody, that you can't use those even for the shechita bird. First, just points out that not necessarily are all these different opinions disagreeing with each other. In particular, Rabba, and yeah, to some extent, they complement each other. Yeah, in particular, Rabba, apparently, Tosfos have to use the Rabba instead of Rava, and Rav Nachman Yitzchok are not necessarily arguing.
What?
Yeah.
Because
Tosfos says that's why you have to, because we still didn't discuss what you do with Chayas. So we can answer that one of these things we learn from Chayas, and one of them we learn from Tosfos. Okay. Fine. All right. The bottom line is, though, that Sipporim still means only kosher species, and that's why our Mishnah said that if it's a non-kosher species, you put it for Shluarakan. Okay. Next, the Mishnah said, Oif Tomei Roivet Albeite Oif Tahor. We said if you have a non-kosher bird resting on the eggs of a kosher bird, or vice versa, then you put it for Shluarakan. So the question is, why? Vishlema Oif Tomei Roivet Albeite Tahor. Okay, if the bird is non-kosher and the eggs underneath it are from a kosher species, of course you're not. But in a sipper of a lecker, because again, it has to be a sipper, and it's not. Ela Oif Tahor Roivet Albeite Oif Tomei. Why should you not have to do Shiloh Hakan? Hot sipper. Isn't it a sipper? The answer is
the children and the mother have to be tipper.
No, the pastures can tipper means a nest of a bird, so it means that the mother is a kosher species. The answer is kid omer of Kahana, just like Rav Kahana said in a different context that we're going to quote in a second, that he said when the pasuk says tikach loch, that you can take the eggs or the chicks for yourself after you send away the mother. The word loch means below the klopefa, not in a situation where the only thing you can do with them is give them to your dog, because they're also to eat. Hachanami, the same thing over here. Tikach loch, below the klopefa, the same thing over here. Eggs from a non-kosher bird you couldn't eat. The only thing you could do after you take them is feed them to a dog.
How does he relate that?
Loch, tikach loch. Actually, loch means for you. Right there in the pasuk, shalach, shalach ha'ta'im, v'etabonim tikach loch. So therefore, that's why if it's non-kosher, that's why if it's eggs from a non-kosher bird, then they're excluded. Okay. The Heicha Itmar Rav Kahana, what is the original context of Rav Kahana's statement? Aha, it's on the following braisa, the Tanya. Eim Trefa Chaya B'Shiluach, a mother Trefa, you Chaya B'Shiluach, so we're going to see on the base. Do we mean that the mother is Trefa, or do we mean a mother of chicks that are Trefa? We'll get to that on other days, but a mother trefa, yuchai b'shiluach, efroichen trefa is potter b'shiluach. So that's what I mean. Yeah, em trefa means if the mother herself is trefa. Nevertheless, you still chayav to do shiluach kan. Efroichen trefa, but if the chicks are trefa, potter b'shiluach, then you potter from spending.
We just said that.
No, not non-kosher species. But if the chicks are not kosher because they have a fatal defect, then you potter from spending away the mother. Yeah. So why is that? Menahani Mili, where do we know that from? Amar Kana. That's why. Because the apostle says you can take the eggs or the chicks for yourself, meaning not where it's only for your dogs. So therefore, since the trefa, there's nothing you can do with it except give it to the dogs to eat. So therefore, you're called to Shiloh Kana. So the question is, v'lakish ein tshefa le'efraichim. So in that case, if we have, if the Torah is implying that the chicks have to be kosher, that they can't have a defect that makes them tshefa, why don't we make a hekesh between the mother and the chicks? And say, because after all, they're mentioned in the pasuk next to each other. And say, therefore, that if the chicks are tshefa, you're potter, but also if the mother is tshefa, you should be potter. Why are we saying if the mother is tshefa, you're chayev? The answer is, in that case, then why would you need the word sipur to tell us that you don't do it for a non-kosher species? If you're going to say that the word tikach loch applies not only to the eggs or the chicks, but also to the mother, then automatically we would know a non-kosher bird, you're potter shalach kan. You don't need sipur, exactly. Okay, so the question is, v'atanya eim efreichim tshefa chayev b'shalach. Okay, but we learn in a braisa that a mother of chicks Trefa is chayev in shaloh hakan, which sounds like it means that the chicks are trefa. It sounds like trefa is an adjective that applies to a person.
Is it a person, a
trefa? It's chayev in shaloh, that's what it sounds like. That sounds like the Braita is saying. In fact, Tosfos points out, Tosfos brings a girsa that's not efroichin trefa, but efroyach trefa. Efroyach meaning one single chick, trefa. And therefore trefa could modify efroyach. And then it would so contradict the previous braisa. The answer is Omar Abai.
Would mean,
in other words, that even if the chick is trefa, the chick, the answer is no. Omar Abai, hachakama, efroyach, she'imon trefa. The word aim efroychen trefa, the word trefa doesn't refer back to efroychen, it refers back to aim. Because that way it won't contradict the previous braisa. Efroyach, she'imon trefa. If a chick where the mother is trefa, chayev b'shiluach, you're still chayev b'shiluach, because it doesn't matter the status of the mother, it matters the status of the chick. Because tikach loch below the klobah. And we don't do a hekesh with the mother.
Okay.
Because tikach loch and the mother, you can't take. The mother you have to send away. Okay. Boyd of Hoshia. Hoshit yodeh lakein. What if the person stuck his hand into the nest, the shochat miut simonim, and he reached in and shechted a minority of the simonim of the chicks. So he reached in under the mother and shechted a miut of the simonim of the chicks. So mahu, what would be the din? Would we say that he still has to do shiloh hakam? Why is that? Miyamrinan, do we say, kiven de ilo shavik lahu. Now, after all, if you were to leave these chicks as it is, mitaufi, eventually they would become trefa. Now, we learned before in the Masechta that when you've shechted to less than half of the windpipe, the bird is not trefa yet. You have to have a majority of the windpipe cut. However, Hagoris Marav Ransburg over here on the side brings from the Shach, who points out that the fact is, it hurts the bird if it's been partially shechted. Eventually, it's going to move around. Eventually, the crack is going to widen, and therefore, eventually, it's going to become a trefa. So then, in that case, but in loch below the klavafa. So then, we use Rav Kahana's derasha that because now they're only suitable for your dogs, therefore you pass it from shalakan or yoma, or maybe not. Given to be yodir the migma shchita, since he has the ability to finish the shchita, and therefore since he has the ability to finish the shchita, you can't call it trefa. Therefore, tikach loch koyinabe. Therefore, we can apply to it the word tikach loch because he is able to take it for himself and eat it himself. V'chayv v'shiluach, and therefore he'd be chayv v'shiluachakan even now. And the answer is teku. We don't know, and therefore he'd be chayiv at shiloh hakan, but if he took the mother, then he's not chayiv malchus. The general rule in our perek, whenever we're going to say anything that's teku, means you're not supposed to do it, you're supposed to do shiloh hakan, but if you didn't, you're not going to be chayiv malchus. So that's how it is over here, because of the suffix. Okay. Boy Rav Yirmiyah, so now, Rav Yirmiyah asks a series of questions, like in this connection. Machlis mahu shetachos. First of all, would a cloth be a separation? Suppose you have the eggs are in the nest, there's a cloth over the egg, then the mother is sitting on top of the cloth. Is that considered a chatzitza? And therefore you wouldn't need shiloh hakan, or maybe not. What about knafayim mahu? What if you have loose feathers under the mother, between the mother and the egg? And before, well, there may be, but there's usually not enough loose feathers to make a complete separation. Here we're talking about that there's a thick layer of loose feathers that they're completely blocked. And the Poshim point out because it's kind of an intim salayma. The Gemara is not saying it is an intim salayma, but that's the implicit assumption. You could argue that maybe a cloth would be a hefsek because it's not from the same mean, but feathers are the same mean, so maybe they shouldn't. Or maybe after all, the fact is that it's a hefsek.
Who says the concept of hefsek would apply?
Because in Pashas, it's a possible thing that it has to be resting al hefroshim, then it would mean. It's not directly.
What?
Is it the al ha'frechim or al ha'beitim? It's on the eggs or on the chicks. Yeah. Okay. What about beitim muzores mahu? What about if the eggs are unfertilized eggs, which are never going to develop a chick? And in fact, the next Mishnah says you potter from shiloh hakan in those cases, but in that case. But the question is over here, mahu, what would be the din? Suppose you have two layers of eggs. You have a layer of beitim muzores, and under them you have a layer of regular eggs. So would we say that the beitim muzores constitute a hakisa between the mother and the good eggs? And therefore, so if it does, then you'd be allowed to take out the good egg. You still can't take the mother necessarily, because after all, let's but if you say that the beitim muzores are considered a chatzitza, you could reach in and take one or more of the eggs from the lower row, from the lower layer. Or maybe not. Maybe beitim muzores are not considered a hefsek. What about Shnei Sidri Beis? Muzaris literally means strange, but also the Tiferes Yisrael says that it may also be related to a word for spun yarn, because these eggs, after a while, like when they start maturing or spoiling or whatever, like you have a thread like, you know, like twisted thread like things in there. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, what about Shnei Sidri Beis and Zua Gabzu Mahu? What about if you have two layers? And by the way, how would you know that they're based in Muzaris? One thing I guess is if you know that there was no male in the area, you were watching it, let's say. Another example could be, let's say you take one egg, you crack it open, you find it's based in Muzaris. Yeah, okay. Anyway, the point is, what about Shnei Sidri Beisim Zuragav Zumahu? What if you have two regular rows of eggs, one on top of the other? None of them are based in Muzaris, but fine. Would we say that the top layer is still a Hatzitza blocking from the bottom layer? So fine, again, you wouldn't be able to take the mother, this is the case that Tosfos is saying, because she's sitting on the top layer. Definitely, Shiloh HaKan applies to the top layer. But the question is, can you reach under Al-Hafresh and Al-Habesim? So there's no question she's on top of the top. In the previous case, we don't need that. Maybe you could take the mother, because maybe the Beisim Muzaris are a separation. But over here, okay, there's obviously no separation between the mother and the top layer of eggs. So you definitely can't take the mother at that point, because she's sitting on the top layer of eggs. But maybe you could take something from the bottom row, from the bottom layer.
So, why does it say Al-Hafreshim the Al-Habesim?
Oh, yeah, Al-Habesim. On the chicks or
the other way around, then maybe it doesn't work.
What do you mean? I don't understand. It says Al HaFresh. If I remember, it says Al HaFresh, and the mother is crouching on the HaFresh, on the chicks, or Al HaBeitim, or on the egg. Yeah.
So the sequence of the process means only this way, the other way around.
I don't understand. But here we're talking about if you have two rows of eggs, one on top of the other. Fine. So that's the question. Do we say it's definitely considered on top of the top row of eggs? It's definitely Al the top row of eggs. But is it also Al the bottom row of eggs? Do we say that the top row is a chitza or not? And another possibility, Zohar Agave Beitzim on a Keva Agave Zohar. What if the male bird is resting on the egg, and then the female bird is sitting on top of him, Mahu? What would be the din? Is the Zohar, as we're going to say first, as we're going to say, the next piece of Gemara is going to say, is you're not Chayiv in Shiloh HaKan.
The other way around.
So if the female is on the bottom, for sure you're going to be chayev. But if the male is on the bottom, then would you be chayev? And the answer with all of these cases, again, is take.
Usually the male's going to sit on the...
That's why the Gemara is going to say that you're usually possible. Well, what's yeah. Okay, fine. What about Boy Rab Zera? Rab Zera asks, here's another question. Yoina al beitzei tassil mahu. What if you have a dove sitting on the eggs of a tassil, which is a species related to doves? We talked about it back at the end of the fourth paragraph. We talked about a couple of possibilities. What is it? What it is exactly? As Steinsaltz mentions, it might even be a species of dove, which nowadays lives only in the South Pacific, but maybe in their times it was more widespread. Anyway, whatever. Or the other way around, tassel al beitzei yoina mahu. What about if you have a tassel sitting on eggs of a dove? What would be the din? I'm going to buy a toshma. It's a kosher bird, yeah. But it's still a different species. I'm going to buy a toshma. Oif tomei rovitz al beitzei oif tohar. We said in the Mishnah that if a tomei bird is resting on the birds of a tohar bird, the tohar rovitz al beitzei oif tomei, potem shalach, ha tohar v'tohar chayim. So the implication seems to be that as long as the mother is a kosher bird and the eggs come from a kosher bird, you would be chayav. So that would show that, yeah, with a yoina and a tosu, yeah. And the answer is the Gemara says not necessarily. Juma b'kodei. Maybe the Mishnah is maybe the point of the Mishnah is maybe when the Mishnah is saying that if it's tahor v'tahor, maybe it's talking specifically about a kodei, where the normal thing is, as we learned in the Mishnah, as we're going to learn in the next piece of Gemara, that a kodei commonly sits on birds, a commonly sits on eggs that are not of its own species. So maybe then only. Right, so maybe only a, we said a partridge. I don't have to find your picture after, yeah. But, okay, I mean, it's minor time now, but, yeah. So maybe in the case of a kodei, you'd be chayav in Shiloh HaKan because it's normal for it to sit on eggs of other species. But not necessarily would that apply to a yona and a tafsil where they don't usually sit on each other's on each other's eggs. Yeah, but machlokes were showing him in this connection. What about if they're both the same species, but the mother is not the mother of these particular eggs? Would you be chayiv in shloach hakan? And we're mentioning earlier yona and tassa, which are two different species. So does that imply for all the same species you would be chayiv? Or maybe it means even then not. Okay. And there's a picture of one type of partridge, for example.
It's
a bird, yeah.
What's it called in English?
That's what it's called in English, a partridge.
Partridge.
T-A-R-T-R-I-D-G.